This is Marketplace Tech for February 9th. I'm Molly Wood, filling in for Ben Johnson. Regulators in India say Facebook's free basics program violates net neutrality. The service lets people access a Facebook-picked set of sites on their phones without it counting against their data usage. That process is called zero rating. The Indian government says it's banning all zero rating in that country. Here's Nick Economides, professor of economics at NYU's Stern School of Business. Professor, how significant is this ruling for Facebook or any other company?
Well, I think it's important that India upheld its network neutrality rules and did not allow Facebook to come in and provide a very, very small part of the Internet rather than the whole Internet. The network neutrality rules require an even playing field among all websites, and Facebook was clearly violating that.
Talk a little bit about the controversy. Facebook's argument, of course, is, look, we're trying to provide free access to useful services. What was the complaint purely about net neutrality, or were there economics involved as well?
Well, Facebook says, well, we're giving something away, therefore you shouldn't really bother us. That's essentially the argument. But the rules are rules, and the rules say that there has to be an even playing field among all websites on Internet service. And that's where the issue is, really. The fact that it's for free is not the most important thing.
So now what's interesting is that here in the U.S., this practice of zero rating seems to be actually gaining speed among our carriers. T-Mobile has a zero-rated product. Verizon just announced that. What's the difference in the two internet economies there?
The FCC has not said whether it's legal or illegal. In my opinion, zero rating will prove to be a violation of the network neutrality rules in the United States.
And then back to India, how significant is it for Facebook? What did they have riding on this product?
Well, Facebook wants to get bigger market share, more subscribers worldwide, and it's trying this tactic. Nevertheless, I would say that Facebook has done very, very well in the United States and elsewhere without using these tactics. And therefore, I don't quite see why does it need to go that far.
That's Professor Nick Economides speaking to us from NYU. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
The New Hampshire presidential primary is happening today. And even if you haven't participated in a political poll or primary, it's a good bet you've tweeted about it. Because if social media has taught us anything, it's that everyone cares what you think about politics. Adam Sharp leads the election team at Twitter. Adam, can you tell what people are thinking about based on their tweets, or maybe even how they're going to vote?
I'd stop short of going all the way to the we can tell how people are going to vote. We can see, though, what is driving that conversation. So, for example, during a debate, we can see precisely what moments in that debate are provoking that reaction. Now, those conversations can sometimes be a very strong signal of what is happening in the electorate.
Is there a future in which you could turn that into a data operation? We've been hearing a lot about the decline of and accuracy of traditional polling. Could Twitter data start to fill those gaps?
There's two big areas where there's influence. One, as people start cutting the cords and moving towards mobile phones, that's presented a significant challenge to traditional polling, and more than 80% of Twitter use is on mobile devices. I think there's also something to be said for that gap window between the last poll and Election Day itself. A lot can happen in that 2 or 3 day space. And it's, in fact, that last 72-hour conversation that was most telling in Iowa.
Let's talk briefly about the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, the idea that if you observe something, you change it. Some people say when they watch a debate with Twitter, they can have a completely different experience than if they watch it without Twitter. Does social media ever sort of get in the way of us forming our own opinions?
I wouldn't put it as getting in the way. I think it is exposing us perhaps earlier to the opinions of others and challenging our own opinions. Very often, if you rewind 10, 20 years, everyone had the same experience of watching that debate, and then the only other opinions they'd be exposed to would be the immediate people in the living room with them and the pundits on TV. And so what Twitter provides is an experience that brings some more voices into that mix.
While I have you, in case you want to tell me and only me, I know that there are reports that there might be a newly curated Twitter feed, and I was wondering if you might be able to comment on that.
I think Jack Dorsey, our CEO, said it best when he tweeted about it over the weekend and said, Twitter is a real-time conversation, and that's never going to change, but we are going to keep looking for ways to make it more Twittery and more engaging for our users. And I think that's about all I'll share about it right now and let Jack say more in the future.
Adam Sharp is the head of Twitter's election team. Thanks a lot, Adam.
Thank you, Molly.
Let's keep filling up the social media calendar. Fashion Week starts tomorrow in New York. Social media and the internet have made the once exclusive fashion event a lot more accessible to the rest of us. Zoe Washington Scheff is a fashion editor and CEO of the consulting company Little Bird. She says social media is so powerful now that some designers won't even hire models unless they have thousands of followers on Instagram.
Really large numbers that are difficult to cultivate on your own as an independent model.
The other thing about social media, we see tons of pictures of new designs months before they're available to purchase. Not always a good thing.
And by time it trickles down into actual stores, consumers are over it. And not only are they over it, but they're unwilling to pay full price for items that they now deem old, even though they're in the stores for the first time.
To avoid that clothing fatigue, some brands, like Burberry, are planning to make certain collections available to the public as soon as they hit the runway. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Tech. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.